Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast to the Music and Arts Show with Nancy and Lisa. And you just heard or watched Adrian, and that's the first single from the full-length album San Fernando Blast by Sandy McKnight with Fernando Perdomo. And I encourage you to go to Sandy's website. It's sandymcknight.com. And it is out now, right, Sandy? Welcome back. How are you?
I'm experimenting with different ways to release albums because the music world keeps changing. Even though I do, you know, send the records to streaming services and everything like that, selling them is a different thing. So I'm on Bandcamp, which is a great website, and if you put in my name .bandcamp.com, you'll get me. And then, well, you won't get me, you'll get pictures of albums.
You'll get the album. Yeah, you can get the album.
Yeah.
Well, listen, and especially buy on Friday, right? That's the good time to get the album.
Yes, Fridays they waive some of their fees so that the artists can be paid more.
Yeah.
And that's always a nice thing.
That, you know, nice. I think Bandcamp is about it. I mean, CD Baby was what at the one in the beginning, and now they're really doing the licensing and streaming. But and then it was the singles thing. So Adrian's the first single, right, from this album. That's one of the three new tunes on this album.
Yeah, we just to give the audience a little background, Fernando and I, Fernando Perdomo, recorded 12 songs over the last couple of years, and those 12 songs were released as EPs, two separate EPs. One was San Fernando Beat and one was San Fernando Blitz. Then I decided that since not enough people heard those two EPs, and some people just don't like EPs because they're not enough music, that I would do a full length album, including those 12 songs, plus three new ones, And those we, Fernando and I, recorded over the last few months.
Awesome.
And it's finally done. And you have a picture of it there, but I have the actual thing here.
Oh, yeah, he's got it.
Cool.
So, yeah, so people are still doing that, right? Actually, well, real product.
Well, first of all, you have to have CDs in order to send stuff out to people. Mm. You can send them links like we did. I sent you a link to my stuff. But most reviewers and other radio people like to have a hard copy of it. So I now print a very small number because they don't sell just like randomly online that much.
Yeah, people want to just get it, download it, like Kindle versus a book. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And if you're doing a show, it's nice to have CDs.
Yeah. And then you can sign them and, you know, give them to everyone. But I mean, the first two EPs did really well. You got a lot of good reviews. So I think people like it because it's a little bit, it goes throughout the ages of pop, right? You call it power pop. And it really does. I mean, even Adrian, I'm like, it's still got that Elvis Costello vibe to it. You know, I'm like, dude, he's driving it. So it goes into the 80s.
It's even. Edgy.
Yeah,
it's a little edgy.
Yeah, you got a little edginess. I think that's part of your personality. You're sweet, but here
well,
it is.
Well, I beg your pardon.
I just wanted to mess with you a little bit. I didn't know, but that's a good thing. I mean, it's called, you know what I mean. You got good humor, you know. Yeah. So it's, and you can't not have a little bit of edge to get out there in front of an audience to do.
Yeah, I think what I bring to the table in terms of originality is like a vast experience over the years. I started playing bass in 1968.
Yeah.
So that goes way back.
Yeah, Woodstock, and you got your memoir. Tell people you got your memoir too, right?
I did. I wrote a book called Kid 69, which was about that year, 1969, when I was 15, 16 years old. And that's available on Amazon. Thank you for mentioning
and
that.
You can get it on Kindle if you want to download it.
There's that audio version. The audio version is on Bandcamp, actually, so if you wanted that.
Oh, I didn't know you could.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's cool. So did you read it? Or?
Yes. Me and James Earl Jones, we did it together.
No. James Earl Jones.
That's a big voice.
No, but I think when it's memoirs, that it should be the person if it's possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's that's cool. But that's why I said, if you know people know you on Facebook, you crack me up, man. I'll like you do. I'm like, damn. Like, what did you put in your coffee this morning, man? You're alive. You're kicking. You're doing stuff. You know, watching the world. Does that influence your music? What's going on in the world?
Yeah, I think what happened with working with Fernando was that since he's so versatile, I was able to explore different nuances in that overall genre of power pop or pop rock or whatever you want to call it. And so I didn't do this really on purpose, but I started to realize that I was tapping into lots of different kind of subgenres of pop. And for instance, Nancy connected with Single Flowers, which has a little bit of a maybe psychedelic feel to it. Or...
Yeah, Nancy, I don't know, man. What you tell us? You did. She did a cool video to that. Took her what? 2 years? A year?
A year. Now, well, we're a little on the busy side, so it took me. And I'm sorry it took so long, but it was fun. I liked it.
Well, I wasn't sure if you were actually serious about doing it, so I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't pressure you, or I didn't say, hey, where's that like, video?
You're probably what's going on?
Yeah.
No, but yeah.
It was a great surprise when it came, and the timing is great too, because that's on the album, Single Flowers. And also, you know, there's a couple of other things that have a 60s influence. Adrian, I feel, has kind of a R&B-ish kind of vibe too. I brought in some horn players, which I haven't used on many other things. And and it wasn't, as I say, purposeful. It just is like all the influences were coming out as I was writing.
But your music is very catchy. And listen, Single Flowers, let me tell you, it's, you know, Nancy's working on that. We're like, just stop it already.
How many times did we hear it?
Like, we've heard it and heard it. Like, even then, once you hear it, it sits with you all day. Like, I'll walk up into Nancy and I'll go, hey, Single Flowers. So, but it does, but all the songs are catchy. Adrian is catchy as heck. So who is Adrian?
Ooh, hello.
Well, to be honest,
I had to ask.
I often write songs with girls' names. Chloe's Gone is also on the record. Yeah. I think there's one other one. And I just pick names I like. And the first name I often think of is Marianne. But I've used that one a few times, so I didn't want to use it on this one.
So the next project is project is the A to Z of girls.
Yes,
oh. I dare you. 26 songs.
On Spotify, I created a playlist of all my girls' name songs. So if you're ever on Spotify,
we do playlists on there too.
Yeah,
yeah, your flowers will end up on one of our flower powered ones.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah, and I don't know if you were familiar with Heart in Your Hands. That's on the record. And that one is also very psychedelic influence. And Fernando did a great job of capturing that vibe with his playing.
Let everybody know, like, the beginning of you guys connecting, because this is like now the third project, right? If the combination of the two. But this, you know, you're up in the Berkshires right now. And
yes.
You went to the West Coast, and that's where you met him?
Quick story I'll tell. My brother-in-law is one of the members of a band called 2020, which was popular in the late 70s, early 80s. And he still gets out there and does music stuff. And he ran into Fernando at some studio, and so when I was doing a project with my brother-in-law, Chris Salaggi is his name, and he recommended Fernando's studio as one place we could work on some things. So we went there, recorded just one night, and but Fernando kind of stuck in my head because he's a very colorful character. And
he's got the coolest smile, man. He really does.
Talk about energy. He's Mr. Energy. So so when I was out there for some other thing out in LA, I called him and just said, you know, let's spend a day and see what happens in the studio. And then we played, and it was like, yeah, this is great. You know, I love this. And then COVID came along.
Yeah.
and I was kind of like, well, let's finish this record, because we did three songs while I was out there, ended up going back another day after the first day. And then we figured out how to do it long distance. So I send him a demo of the song as I wrote it with, you know, my arrangement ideas. And then he will play drums, guitars, and sometimes keys, and send it back to me. And I add bass guitar, vocals, you know, mixing, all the other elements that go into it. Mm. And we have a finished product. And
Are you writing your songs on while you're playing the bass?
No, I write on guitar.
Okay.
But I'm a really bad guitar player, so I don't want to do that on the record.
Well, no, I was wondering, because of the, you know, when you have bass, it makes you get to the point. You know what I mean? And I think that your songs they drive like, boom, here we go. And it's catchy. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was wondering if you wrote on bass, because they just.
I probably hear the bass in my head when I'm writing. Mm-hmm. Single Flowers, for instance, has a memorable bass line. Mm-hmm. And yet I didn't really come up with that until I was in the studio. And featuring it like I did in the mix was just, you know, a happy accident. Those things happen. But I try to think about what the record sounds like as I'm writing the song or immediately after. Mm-hmm. So Adrian I immediately heard this horn riff that's in the song. And, you know, normally I'd have the guitarist do it or something, but I really felt like real horns would add another dimension. Yeah. And, you know, horns are great if you don't overdo it, I think. And I have not overdone it. So
It came out good. The album was great. It flows really good. And I'm glad they're all together, you know, because I know that we live in the world of singles.
Yeah.
And I get it. But like personally, I just want to hear the whole thing. And it's like, to me, what you've done with Perdomo is, you know, Fernando is just put the whole thing together. It's just like, okay, now here it is. Here's the complete project. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I've done a lot of records on my own without Fernando, but with other musicians.
Sure.
And I haven't found, you know, anyone who's really captured what I was going after as well as Fernando has. Mm-hmm. Sometime I'll send you my previous attempts.
Yeah.
But the great thing with him is that I don't have to teach him about the history of music because he knows.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He's like a lot younger than me. He knows, like, if I made a reference to, you know, whoever, he would know who that was.
Yeah, he's Echo cool. The Canyon, so everybody knows, you know, him from there too. But he's really been in he's like a musician's musician, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think on the documentary, you know, people are starting, oh, yeah, now I know who that is, you know, unless you've seen him perform live, you know. But working together like that, it's amazing that music, I mean, that's the one thing we have to say that's positive about the internet, other than social media crud. I'll be nice. But, you know, the internet, if it wasn't for the internet, like, really, all this music over the pandemic, right? It's like so many, I don't know musicians who were just in there twiddling their thumbs. It was like a whole other work move.
Well, it was the perfect storm of remote capabilities in the studio and lots of time that we didn't always have before the pandemic. Mm. And I've actually coined it the bandemic.
Yeah.
Because a lot of bands got together and started writing and recording. And so it was a boost to the music scene. On the other side of the coin, there's so much music out there now that it's very hard to break through the.
Yeah. You know. And I know musicians, you know, some are on tour and doing okay. Some have started going on tour and then it's like this venue's canceled or. You know, so we're still in that little up and down.
The live thing, the live thing is tricky right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how do you feel about going out and performing live? Because don't you do theater too?
Yes, I just did a show a couple of weeks ago here in the Berkshires. We created a comedy variety show called the Berkshires.
See, I told you about the edge. See, I'm not being rude. I'm just saying he's got
just some humor pushing in the there. Envelope a bit.
Yeah, you need it. That's what the arts are for. Poke.
Yeah, and it was tricky because we weren't sure people would show up, you know, because people are still nervous. It's not as bad around here as some places, but it's still, you know, a concern to be inside in a theater.
Yeah.
But we did it and we had a decent turnout and,
cool.
You know, so I'm thinking about maybe in the new year, putting a live thing together and getting out there and,
good.
You know, I have a lot of songs, as you know, it's not just these 15, but.
And then you have the CDs that are printed. Mm-hmm. So you must move those out into the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. 'Cause CDs, tend to gather in basements and closets. And, you know, there's just like an endless supply of old CDs that I'd like to get rid of, you know. But yeah, if I do more live stuff, then I will be able to, you know, pedal a few anyway. Recouping your investment is never a possibility, but you know, you try. And
yeah, I think I hope the streaming thing changes up for musicians in a better way, because even for like even us, it's like, okay, YouTube wants to put ads on there. Are, you know, are people going to watch or listen? There's ads on it. It's like this weird thing, and I want the musicians to make, you know, the money they deserve. Mm-hmm. So I just hope it balances out in a way that's good. I mean, even for podcasters, they're getting screwed, you know.
Yeah, it's tough financially. I think eventually it'll get better. I kind of think of streaming services as like radio stations. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, you would get radio airplay and you'd get a little money from that, but it wasn't a lot, you know, unless you had a major hit that was like number one. But most of your money came from sales and publishing. Mm-hmm. And that's still pretty much the case. But sales, where are you selling CDs anymore? And publishing is now kind of a different animal. Most people keep their own publishing, most songwriters. But you want to get licensing deals and get songs in movies, TV, commercials. That's really where the money is.
And you've done a lot of that.
Well, yes, I have actually.
Well.
I'm quite accomplished in that. Yeah, I have a few songs in movies and a lot of TV stuff, which keeps paying me, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of the songs they use, some of them are, you know, date back to the 80s. But that's actually a plus now, because the 80s is kind of an in thing right now, and a lot of movies.
Do not call it classic rock.
It's kind of, but it's a little bit more of the new wave dance kind of stuff. And I was writing that back in the 80s, and I had access to recording, so I was recording these songs with the authentic instrumentation and all that.
See,
and
that balances into the album now, San Fernando Blast, and both the EPs before it. That's what I was trying to say. You have that sensibility of you're putting all these decades of music into one album, you know, and it's like, you can't just go, okay, it's this or it's that. It's like, oh yeah, it's all of it. And I think that's exciting about where we're, you know, what you've done, but it's also an exciting time for the listener. Because now it's like, look how much music we have in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for people who love music. It's a wonderful time. And, you know, I'm always surprised at the influences that people say they hear on my records. People mention like the Beach Boys. I love the Beach Boys, but I'm not a big, like, you know, or Elvis Costello, which a lot of people compare me to him. And I like Elvis Costello, but I'm not like slavishly. I know like maybe 10 of his songs. I'm not a big like follower of his. Just so happens, guys like Elvis Costello and Graham Parker and Joe Jackson are my age roughly and have the same influences. I think that's what people hear.
It's that same time frame and where everybody's experimenting with that kind of, oh, that's a new sound. Let's take that and make it my own. You know, back in the day, people used to say, oh, you're stealing that. It's not. It's like, oh, we got something new. You know,
it's an homage.
Well, Nancy, doesn't that happen in painting too?
Yes.
There's a new technique. Copy styles.
Whether you're aware of it or not, you're influenced by everything you hear and everything you see. And, you know, if you can identify those influences, fine. But if you can't, just run with it. You know, I'm sure there's stuff on my record that I'm not aware of where I kind of absorb those, you know, styles from. But I'm sure someone else could hear it and go, you know, such and such a band. Okay, this song was like that, you know. And I do that a lot to other people, and it's very annoying.
Nancy does it all the time.
Yeah, I do. Because I hear things, I'm like, well, that's almost that, note for note. And then you say, okay, it changes somewhat, but the feel is the same. Yeah. And I just think that's human nature, because that's, you know, you can identify a time span. I mean, I remember in the painting world when people painting really started to want to do abstracts, and then it kind of tailed off a little bit because the population veered from buying abstracts going back to realism. And then when photography got really, really more people were selling their photos, then all of a sudden realism was, you know, buying against photos. So it's like, can you paint exactly like a photo? Do you want to do that or not? It's not that much fun.
And now cell phones screwed it all up.
Now it's like, I wouldn't say that, because really it's not that easy to take good photos with a cell phone from what I've seen of the results. Sorry, people.
and even if something is based on reality, everyone sees reality differently too. So
good point.
Andy Warhol's kind of cartoonish realism, and then you have, you know, other artists who see things, you know, same thing but differently. And I think that's true with musicians as well. You know, if I suggest, oh, this should be a Beatles kind of feel or something, that can mean different things to different people.
Yeah, someone comes in with George Harrison, let's be all la la la. Or then, Paul McCartney, doo doo doo.
Yeah. Or Helter Skelter.
Or John Lennon, all right, now we're going down. You know,
Any Time of Day is a song on the album. And I purposely, I should say we, because Fernando actually played it, but I asked him to play a particular chord that's identified with the Beatles at the end. And, you know, it was mostly fun, but it was also an acknowledgement of the fact that I'm aware that this is Beatlesque, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes it's also carrying the music through, history forward. And there's a respectful thing about, hey, you know, this is part of what I grew up with and part of my inspiration, and I want to carry it through. It's an homage to.
But there's, musicians. There's only so many chords. So many colors in a palette that an artist can paint with without making a real big mess.
The position that's important.
Yeah.
And with my songwriting, I'm very aware of trying to write it in a way that's going to surprise the listener. There's a lot of songs from even well-known songwriters that have like a four chord pattern over and over again, and maybe the melody kind of dances around that pattern, but it's the same four chords repeated.
Right.
I hate that kind of stuff, even though I've written some things like that, but I try to avoid that. Well, you know, sometimes you just can't escape it.
Well, but I mean, we're also in the world of sampling, you know, where all of a sudden you'll hear, you know, a Police song, like a part of it in a Jay-Z album. I don't know if that happened. I'm just saying,
everybody's influenced by everybody. I even put a little rap on the end of the song Fake. I don't know if you caught that, but not because I'm into rap, just because it made sense in that song. It's kind of a rant, and so
that's
like speaking it instead of singing it seemed
appropriate.
And I only came up with that on the way to the studio, actually. I was thinking, that'd be kind of cool, da, 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 da. And I'm a terrible I'm not a rapper, but you know, it was kind of an angst driven song, so that made sense to me. We borrow from everywhere. Also, as a producer, I'm kind of exposed to a lot of other kinds of music. I worked with John Davidson on a record Nancy, you probably remember John. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyone under 50 doesn't really, but John Davidson was a major guy in TV. Mm-hmm. And he made a lot of records that none of them were hits, but he made a lot. He was, you know, and he was like an icon of TV for 20 years.
That's because he had his own show, didn't he?
He did. He had several. Yeah. And mm-hmm. he also hosted game shows. And he,
Yeah.
So he's like a major guy who now is close to 80 years old. Wow. But about 5 years ago, we did a record together. And, you know, because I have, well, he was doing one of my songs, so that was nice.
That's cool.
And I produced it, and I had to sort of understand or be aware of his style, what suited him, you know. I tried to work with him a little bit on modernizing his singing approach. And, you know, and Fernando did a lot of the tracks on that.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, so I do all kinds of stuff, and it helps to, you know, be aware of the history of pop music, you know.
Doesn't it help also that you're, you know, you do writing, you know, you write your memoir, you write, the fact that you did music and do music for TV, film, commercials, mm-hmm. the fact that you do theater, doesn't all of it kind of put into perspective of how to be a good storyteller, how to get things across?
Yeah, very much so. I've written a few plays and screenplays and stuff. Cool. And I am very aware of the art of telling a story. I'm not maybe as accomplished as I'd like to be at it, but I'm, you know, I'm always trying to learn new stuff and figure out how to get better at everything, you know.
It's a constant process.
Yeah, I mean, I'm now at a point in my life where I'm kind of thinking, okay, what do I do for an encore?
I was going to ask, what's next? What's your next project? Or are you working on something? Or
I'm actually trying to step back and think about it more, because I can endlessly do projects. I mean, I have 5 things on the back burner waiting to happen.
You could write a rock opera.
Oh, here she goes. Nancy wants people to write a lot more rock operas.
I was introduced to the world of musical theater through my wife, who is an accomplished book writer and for musicals.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. She wrote a show called Vanishing Point, which does very well in the world, actually. So, and she was part of that whole New York musical theater scene in the late, what was it, late 90s, early 2000s. And so I was exposed to a lot of that, which I had never really been interested in, but I started to see it as a vehicle for writing more songs. And having the songs be part of a story as opposed to just random short stories, you know? And I wrote a show called The Big One, which was about songwriters and living in Los Angeles and to get a big break, but avoiding the big quake, you know? So that show was well-received. And then I just finished writing. I had done a sitcom pilot a few years ago called The Ragamuffins of Love. And that was about an imaginary band. It occurred to me, duh, write a musical.
Yeah. Because,
you know. So that happened last year. I wrote the musical, and it's one of the projects I'm considering. But it's a big deal to get into a whole thing with production.
Sure.
It's very, it's massive. Whereas, you know, recording a song, not that much time. It's more of just like focus. And, you know, with a couple hours, although Adrian took a lot longer than usual because I was tweaking it and getting horns and, you know.
Yeah, you got more in there. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. More elaborate production. Mm. So I don't, to answer your question, I don't know. I'm playing with the idea of also doing another record, but the music business is so hard right now that it's hard to motivate yourself. Plus, it is expensive. Of course, everything is expensive. So
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just kidding. I think, you know, it is creative. That's, I think, important for audiences to understand the blood, sweat, and tears that go behind a creative mm-hmm. process. You can listen to a song 100 times and love that song and hear something different each time you listen to it. But it's like you say, oh, this is like 2 to 3 hours, but it's years of mastering your craft to get to that point. Right. And then some songs can take a decade because it's something really good, but there's that one little nugget that needs to come out. You know, it's like, bam. And then, oh my gosh, it happened. So it's such a, the arts are just not easy. And our country, we love the arts. Entertainment is a huge mm-hmm. part of our country, but we're not understanding how to support the arts, I don't think. Right. And I think we need to have more programs. I don't know what needs to happen, but we need to get a little bit more like Europe, I think.
Well, it would be good to start with the elementary school level mm-hmm. and teach, you know, culture as part of our, you know, educational system. Whatever people are drawn to, I mean, not everybody is going to care about music. Some people would care about, you know, art or mm-hmm. whatever other field, ballet, whatever, you know, there's so many different ways to go with it, but I don't think kids are necessarily encouraged, at least not in school, to explore those worlds. And
that should be one of the first things.
I think they're introduced to music, but not on the level of
you can do it.
Create music, you can compose music, you could be a singer, you could be a dancer. It's more, those are foo-foo thingies. You just need to know that there's music. And then when you get to like maybe high school, they start, now kids want to be in a band, they want to be in a rock band now, and then the parents are like, oh no, you won't be doing that.
Well, in my book I talk about an experience I had with music when I was in junior high school. I asked to be a part of the chorus, the vocal chorus. I flunked my audition, so they stuck me in instrumental music. And at this point, I hadn't learned any music yet, or how to play anyway. And so they handed me a tenor sax.
Oh.
And that was my instrument. I didn't pick it. They just said, yeah, here's the sax.
Wow.
And so I learned on my own how to play the riff from Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones.
Cool.
And the reason I learned that was because there was a girl I was interested in who was really into the Stones. And so I serenaded her with da, 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 da. And so that's how I got my start in music. And my teacher said, my teacher told me, I wouldn't pursue music if I were.
Oh. Well, yeah. I mean, I remember when I was in school, and I was in guitar and singing, and I grew up like, you know, Nancy is the Doors and the Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel and all these out, you know, and I go in and, you know, you're supposed to sing la, 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 la. And I'm all la, 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 like, you know, let's get some, you know, and she's like, no, you're adding too much to the music. I'm like, oh, screw you. I didn't do very well. You know, and then the guitar, I remember the guitar.
Being creative.
I was not, I know, do not, you do not have any styling to how she just wanted no styling. Then I'm like, but what's the point of doing music if you can't be your own? You know, I was all about, you need to have your own.
You want to bring your own personality and your own.
Sure. But apparently not with that teacher. And then I remember we had our school concert and we're all sitting there on bales of hay with the guitar, and half of the people were supposed to go ding, ding, ding.
That's so funny.
And half of them froze. Some just stopped playing. And I was like, well, I'm bringing my style now.
And so you did.
I did. I was like, you know what? I don't care what any of you say. If you're all frozen and I'm still going, I'm doing it my way. And that's it.
You sang Annie's song.
I did. Oh, you made me sing Annie's song by John Denver. I'll never forget that.
Did you have a career in music?
We did actually have a band. Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, played with a few good, amazing people, but you know, now we're doing this.
We had a lot of band fights.
We could write a book about our band and some of the experiences later, but did a lot of cool stuff out of San Diego. Played with people from Moby Grape, Flying Burrito Brothers, all those kind of guys.
Have you ever seen the movie The Commitments?
I haven't seen it. I've heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty much our band.
Yeah,
I couldn't make a commitment to see it. I used to play with some guys from San Diego.
Oh, yeah?
Back in the early 80s.
Really? No, San Diego had a huge music scene. It still does. Do you remember who?
Michael Beer and Mike Packard were the two guys. And Mike Packard went on to do a lot of stuff in L.A., and he now has an avocado ranch or
Fallbrook.
Oh, wow.
Probably in Fallbrook.
Somewhere between LA and San Diego.
It's Fallbrook.
Right next to Chris Christopherson.
Rita Coolidge lives out there. And JJ Cale lived out there until he passed away. And still JJ Cale.
I never knew what was going on the West Coast, being a New York guy. You know, I was focused on CBGBs and that whole scene at the time. And actually, the two Michaels moved to New York from the West Coast. And so we had a band called Numbers, which played a lot of the CBGB circuit, you know, Electric Room, Great Gildersleeves, all those places. And then Mike Packard stuck with it. And I did too, you know, so we did things together since, you know, we've been, when I go out to LA, he often accompanies me on my gigs and stuff like that.
It's cool how it goes. It's like, it is like this broad family, you know, that you're connected and you just fall right back into the pocket together if you've played, together before. It's so neat to have that. And, you know, with you playing with Fernando, you're in the, you know, here in New York and he's on the West Coast. I know there shouldn't be any difference, but there is something about uniting the two coasts. I can't explain it, but there's two different vibes and it's two different coastlines. And that's that.
There's friction.
You still have to have flow, man. It's like taking the two oceans and making them a river.
But that's what causes the edge.
There we are, back to the edge.
It's the edge.
We're on the edge of the continent.
Well, the edge of the world as we know it.
Yeah, right.
With the end of the world. There you are.
There a guitar player named The Edge.
Yeah, from U2.
Yeah. Fernando. I know.
I just called him Perdomo. I like his name, man. It's like, you can't.
Yeah, that. Great name. And he grew up in the Miami area.
Okay.
And played, he's only been in LA maybe 10 years.
Mm. Yes, he plays with Dave Kirzner a bunch too.
Yeah, so a lot of his influence is that Miami scene, which has got a lot of different flavors.
That is, it's kind of like the balancing. You know, when you think about America, like you've got when you go through Texas and Louisiana, how the whole sound changes. It's just. It's neat. We have good music in this country. We really do.
Yeah, and if we
just, you know, tap into the roots of it, it's pretty darn amazing. And when you get people from different areas getting together, it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, even rap. We were talking about rap. Look at West Coast rap versus East Coast rap. Ooh.
Well, there's a lot of flavors that get mixed together. And that's
what's cool.
Yeah. I just noticed that my computer is saying low battery, so.
All right, well, listen, we're going to go play with Single Flowers before you melt.
All right, because I don't want to just like go black all of a sudden.
Yeah. I know, we know we should be closing with It's the End of the World.
Yeah.
Are we close to the time of?
Yes, we're all good. So we're going to close out with Single Flowers. Nancy did the video of this. Obviously, you and Fernando did the music and close out with that. And the song is on the latest album, San Fernando Blast. They're blasting off, and that's what Sandy's going to do right now. Blast off before he melts with his computer. The album is out now. Go to sandymcknightmusic.com. He's also on Bandcamp. It's all through 22 Records. And he's also on SoundCloud. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks so much, Sandy. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Sandy.
Take care.
Great to see you guys, not just hear you.
I know, you too.
Especially since you're so beautiful, both of you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Gosh, thank you. Nice.
Single flowers last for hours. Signal towers gone so far. Simple creatures grow strange features. No one tells them they can't survive as they are. I wasn't there.